This week on the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast.
Never let your gifts wait for your courage. You know, you got to let get out of your own way sometimes. So you've got to put your fears aside, put yourself out there, and just go for it.
Welcome to the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast. News, interviews, and writing tips for people who are serious about having a writing career and want some practical knowledge to help them achieve it. Your host is the nationally best-selling author of more than 50 books, William Bernhardt.
Hello, sneakers. Hey, my big excitement this time, in addition to interviewing one of my favorite authors, is that my new novel can now be ordered. The second book in the Kinsey Rivera series, the sequel to Splitsville, is now on sale. It's called Exposed. The release date is in October, but you can reserve your copy now in ebook or hardcover. The case begins when Kinsey is asked to handle the divorce of not the usual couple, because nothing is ever normal for Kinsey, but a thruple. And it just gets more complicated from there and ultimately leads to murder. Okay, Jesse, I see you've got the cover up on the screen. It's a cover I really like, but there's a big debate going on at my house. Does this cover photo look like a sexy sexting type photo or like a morgue photo? What do you think?
I think it's one of those psychological ones where you see, like, what you see determines, like, how your mind works. So I honestly, if it wasn't for her makeup, I would say morgue photo. But the makeup makes me, like, her lipstick, I should say. Her lipstick makes me think sexy time photo. But then also, I think it's supposed to be both. So
you think it's like a Rorschach this reveals.
Yeah.
Because I thought sexy, but everybody else thinks she looks dead. Well, and I guess either works for this book, actually.
But. I think it's better that it's a debate. I feel like that, you know, it's like that the blue or gold dress from a couple of years ago.
Right. Well, and look how that went viral. So maybe that will be good for this book.
Get on the internet.
Right. My interview guest today is Betsy Kulikowski. Betsy is the author of three books in the Lauren Graham series, starting with the Veritox Codex, then the Jaguar Queen, I love that title, and the Alien Accord, and there's a fourth one on its way early next year. I've had the pleasure of knowing Betsy for some time now, and the best part of this is I not only like her, I love her books, which dive into the world of unexplained mysteries like Bigfoot and UFO. Ancient Mayan prophecies of doom and fun stuff like that. I can't wait to talk to her, but first, the news. Item number one is about major problems with publishing, distribution, the supply chain for books, and as you might guess would follow, price increases for consumables like paper, which is usually the most expensive part of publishing a book, a paper book, a book with paper pages, and now it's just going to get worse. I mean, this should probably be no big surprise. We've seen shortages impacting almost everything now, so it was bound to happen to books. We are in the midst of a worldwide cataclysm that is changing our lives. Ingram just sent a notice to its customers, which would be virtually every print publisher on earth, telling them there are going to be price increases for printing. And so that's going to affect everybody everywhere. Some of it has to do with China, where printers, have often gone for printing because it's cheaper there. Well, the price of books is going up, so this is going to impact indie authors. I am sure we will weather the storm and people will keep reading books, even if they're a little bit more expensive. But listen, Red Sneaker Riders, if you want print books for some upcoming event, something you know is already on the calendar, order them now. Don't wait. Order now. If you're printing digital first or digital only, of course, it's not going to matter so much. Maybe this will result in more sales of ebooks, as the lockdown did last year. It's hard to predict. Jesse is posting a link to a terrific article by Christine Rush. So if you want to know more about this, this would be a terrific place to look. Jesse, do you think this is going to have a long-term impact on the book world, or is it just going to disappear like last year's toilet paper shortage?
I don't know. I feel like every time there's one of these, people who can raise prices on a thing keep the price the highest. They're, you know,
right. It doesn't go down later.
Yeah, it doesn't go down. And, yeah. You know, the toilet paper crisis was caused, like, these are all paper related crises. And,
that's true.
And trees are either burning or being chopped down. So, you know, I worry about the supply going forward.
Yeah, so. No, I think you're right. If book prices go up, they're not going to drop 2 years later when there's more paper. Once the market has borne it, it'll be there for good. Okay, sneakers, order the books you're going to need in the near future, or maybe even the not so near future now. News item number two is about Reader Reach, which is a new service provided by Written Word Media. They're a terrific service. They do many things, including helping authors and publishers promote their works. With Reader Reach, they're going to assist you in placing very specific and targeted Facebook ads for your books, specific campaigns. They already do things like bargain books and free booksy and whatnot, most of which target, you know, authors who are trying to promote books in specific genres. And this new thing, Reader Reach, really will too. It's, at least for now, targeting specific genres. But I do like the programs that they offer. They're less expensive than most. You know, BookBub is wonderful too. But even if you can get one, it'll cost a fortune. These are much more reasonable. So you might want to check out Reader Reach. Again, sneakers, like it or not, books do not sell themselves, usually. Maybe one time in a million, but usually not. So this is something you might want to check out. Jesse is posting about an article where you can learn more about it. What I think is most interesting, Jesse, is that this campaign is specifically targeting Facebook and Facebook ads. Do you think Facebook ads sell books?
I think they can. I mean, there are some Facebook ads I found very effective, not for books necessarily, but for other things. I know of some people in my life who very often buy a lot of things on Facebook, even when I tell them not to do that. I think because Facebook ads kind of follow you around the internet outside of Facebook too,
right?
The amount of times you can remind somebody that you have a new book out, the better.
That's probably right. You know, in my news feed, which I check almost always day, I see ads and I have to admit I've clicked on them and bought them. Although for me, they're never about books. They're usually about t-shirts with superhero characters on them or something like that. I buy books, I promise, but that never shows up in my Facebook stream. Oh, well. All right. Enough with the news. Jesse, let's move to the interview. And there is the incredibly talented author, Betsy Kulikowski. Betsy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me on tonight.
You bet. You sound terrific. Okay, I know you've listened to this podcast once or twice, so you already know what's coming. Yep. If you could give an author one piece of advice, just one, what would it be?
Never let your gifts wait for your courage. You know, you got to let yourself get out of your own way sometimes. So you've got to... put your fears aside, put yourself out there, and just go for it.
Great advice. Was that true for you? I mean, you strike me as a pretty courageous person.
I'm actually terrified all the time. It's just that having that ability to work past it. I think one of the reasons I didn't publish for so long was simply because I didn't think I was that good. I didn't think anybody would want to read what I was writing. And I was really the only one standing in my way.
Really? Now, in addition to being an author, I know you're also a safety expert, professional, for want of a better term, which I would think is confidence-driven, not fear-driven.
Well, I'm a safety professional out of self-defense. I started out my career about 30 years ago because I'm a klutz, and I was always the one who would trip and fall over the ledge, or you know, I fell off a slide when I was 5 at the playground and broke my right arm and my left leg. And so I really was self-defense for me. It's like, there's no better way to make sure that you don't get hurt than to be the safety professional, making sure other people don't get hurt.
Wow. I never thought playgrounds were that dangerous, but now you're changing my whole, I wish I'd been more careful.
30 years ago. That was a long, lot longer than that.
Right. Not quite as safe as they were today, exactly. I guess. Well, I know you've had plenty to do, because I think you've had another career before this one, and now you're the safety professional, and also you're writing these wonderful books. How did you get interested in being a writer?
Well, writing was always something I was doing in the background. I wrote my first book when I was a little girl, string binding and cardboard cover that I illustrated myself. I don't even remember what it was about, but I've always loved books. I wrote my first poem in second grade when I was 7. It was a paranormal thriller, by the way. I still remember it.
The poem or the book?
Yes, the poem was a paranormal thriller about the Loch Ness Monster. Wow. So always been writing in the background. It's just one of those things. It was kind of my, at the end of the day, I could come home, I could decompress, I could just channel whatever I was going through, whatever I was feeling, whatever I needed to work through. I could do that through writing. And as I did that, I gradually began to, you know, hone my craft and build my skill. And so I write every day, and, you know, just like you say, you write every day. So I do. And that's just the way that I cope with the world and, you know, turn it into something good.
Yeah, not only writing every day, I think I have witnessed you even writing when you were allegedly on a vacation, if I'm not mistaken.
I've written on vacation. I write in the football game, because I don't care about the football game. I'm there for the marching band. I'm a band parent, so I'm there for the band. I wrote on the cruise every day. You know, I write every chance I get.
That's fantastic. And of course, that's one reason why you've been able to do so much work. Was it hard getting to that point? I mean, did you put a lot of stuff in the mail or the email, or?
I always feel like I'd never fully paid my dues as an author. I had sent out a couple of queries trying to get published. And I think I sent one to Harlequin, and I sent a couple out to different agents. And then I found WriterCon and got the chance to pitch. So I don't have that stack of rejection letters that most authors get. Mm-hmm. I think I have 4.
Well, now I'm going to be opportunistic and say the obvious, that you don't have that huge stack because you came to WriterCon.
Exactly. That's exactly how I got here.
And it worked out for you, right?
It did.
What'd you learn at the conference?
I think really what I learned was just, I started to get my self-confidence. I started to see what other writers were writing and meeting other people. Networking is always huge. That's something that's been big in my safety career, is we get through the world through networking. So I learned a lot about that. And then I learned how to pitch a book. At the 2019 conference, I was sitting in one of those sessions taking notes, because I'm a copious note taker. And in my notes, I wrote down that my goal within the next year, I will do one thing. I don't know what it is, but I will do one thing that will get me invited to be a speaker at WriterCon 2020. And I didn't tell you about it. Didn't tell anybody. And then we went on the writer's cruise and pitched what became the Veritas Codex. And the next thing I know, I'm a speaker at WriterCon 2020 and again in 2021.
So where other people were dreaming of seeing their names on the spine of a book, you just wanted to be a speaker. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, you know, the spine of the book goes with it.
Yeah.
That's it's right. A package deal.
Yeah. That happened because you were a published author. So what are the things you've learned since that time? Obviously, you're working at a professional level, but what have you learned along the way?
You know, I learned that you don't get anywhere by yourself. You know, I've kind of always practiced that anyway, but even in writing, it's, you know, it's a lonely profession, but you still have to have connections. You have to have networks. You work with people as a writer. You work with your publisher, your editors. So you want to be easy to work with. You have to be professional at all times. You want to make sure you respond to emails, you know, respond professionally. You know, if somebody gives you criticism that stings, or, you know, the editor comes back and says something about, well, this doesn't work, it's okay to get your mat on and then get over it and then go fix it.
You know, I know you spoke this year at RyderCon, and of course I didn't hear it, and I haven't heard the recordings yet, but I know you were talking about be the rider. Is that the kind of stuff that you were saying?
Oh, yeah. I talked about, you know, having a budget, how important that is to be prepared for the expenses that come with being a writer. Even if you've got a great publisher, you're still going to have expenses to go to conferences, to pay for training, to, you know, buy wardrobe. You know, you've got to have your subscriptions for your computer. You've got to have a computer, you know, a website, all those things. You know, it's a business and you have to have money to make money. That's one of the lessons my father taught me. So that's one of those that I always go back to is you have to have money to make money. So those are some of the things that I talked about.
Well, those are things that that coupled with a business about treating it like a profession, not a hobby, answering your email, getting back to people promptly. I mean, those are so important. But sometimes writers don't get it because they're, you know, well, I'm an artist and that's an excuse for everything. Yeah. You know, like, did Hemingway answer calls? Well, I don't know, but he might have had more books.
Depends on who was buying the drinks, I think.
And that is not professional behavior.
Exactly.
Absolutely. No, that really is. I wonder if, of course, I practiced law for more than a decade at this big Tulsa firm, and you've had careers as well. And I wonder if that's not part of the key here, that having to function in a high level professional position demands those kinds of habits, and then they carry over to the writing life.
Yeah, it's so true. I spent 30 years working in state government. I was 27 and a half. I worked for the State Department of Labor. So I worked as a government official. I worked as a regulator and a consultant. So I worked with a lot of business professionals, people who were at the top of their game running multi-billion dollar corporations, trying to teach them how to keep their workers from getting hurt and telling them how to spend their money to make workplace safety work for them. And so you have to be prepared to have those difficult conversations and to talk about things that are kind of outside of your area of expertise. I'm a safety professional, but I had never run a business until I moved into my retirement career. So it's pretty intimidating to walk in the big boss's office and say, you know, you've got a great facility here, but it could be safer. And that you're going to get one of two responses. Is one of them is going to lean in and go, okay, how do I do that? And the other one, he leans in and goes, how much is that going to cost me?
Hey, I know there are some people watching this live, and if you are out there and would like to ask Betsy a question, please just type it into the chat window and we'll get that question answered. Let's talk about your books a little bit. As I think I already said, we've got three books in this series, starting with The Veritas Codex. Where did the idea for these books come from?
So I have always been a fan of any kind of reality TV that deals with the unexplained. I grew up watching In Search Of, and then the Travel Channel came up with Destination Truth and Expedition Unknown. And those are all some of my favorite programs. I live and breathe that stuff. So I think I was sitting one night watching one of those programs and I thought, you know, what if they really found something, but they couldn't tell anybody about it? What would that be like? And I start a lot of my stories with what if. So I just took that what if and thought, okay, I'm going to come up with a great character who's, you know, a female who's strong. So the first protagonist that came through was Lauren Grayson. And she had to be smart, so she had a PhD. And I decided, well, okay, biological anthropologist, that sounds important. Let's see if that'll work. And that's kind of where the story started, was on the hunt for Bigfoot. What if they really found Bigfoot, but they can't tell anybody? Why would they not be able to tell anybody? So that's kind of where that all began.
And that explains why the truth hasn't been revealed, I suppose.
Exactly.
Over and over again. Eventually, something's going to have to be revealed, isn't it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we get little nuggets along the way. And in book two, we get they get a little bit of a win on something they could talk about, but they still can't tell the whole truth.
Mm-hmm. And I got to apologize. I realize now that I mispronounced your heroine's name in the introduction, but whatever.
It's okay.
Veritas Codex. Just
yes. that's the important part. Get the title right.
So why her? Well, maybe you've already answered that. Yeah. If you were watching television programs, was a television investigator the natural protagonist then?
It was, but every one of them that I saw at that time was a male. And, you know, I had never really written from a male's perspective. So I really wanted the main character to be a female. I wanted her to be one of those that could just get out there and break barriers and knock through glass ceilings and not be afraid to push the status quo. I think that's one of the reasons I like Kinsey Rivera so much. She's just like Aaron. So kudos to you on that one.
Thank you very much. Well, that makes a certain sense, but you know, without giving away too much, she is, as the series develops in a relationship, mm-hmm. she is a mother. Mm-hmm. So she's not just the, you know, I don't know, Lara Croft. She's kind of having it all, right?
Right. And in the beginning of the story, she's not of the mind that she wants that because she thinks it'll interfere with her ability to do the things that she does and to have the adventures that she has. And that's one of Lauren's truths that she just knows, if I have a kid, I can't do the job that I do. And boy, we're going to turn that one on its ear.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Just have to have a good support system. I learned that really quick when I had kids.
Right. Okay. First one involves Bigfoot, among mm-hmm. other things. We'll just throw that out. And then we get to the Jaguar Queen. What's mm-hmm. going on there?
So that is an investigation into the Mayan apocalypse of 2012. And that's kind of the timeline that the set is set in. And the crew is sent to go do an investigation because at the last minute, the network decides they've got to have a show. Everybody else is doing one. They've got to get one done. And they get into the middle of a murder missing persons case, which is completely, you know, outside of the scope of what they went down there for. And once they get drawn into it, there's really no way to get out of it without solving the case.
Mm-hmm. Okay, isn't this sort of anticlimactic? Because I'm pretty sure the world did not end in 2012, right?
And I think we're all very relieved about that. And I think everybody in the investigation went into that knowing, oh, this is just another one of these big, you know, whatever kind of cases. But it really turned out to be one of their biggest investigations to date.
Cool. And then there's the Alien Accord, which, well, the title kind of speaks for itself, mm-hmm. doesn't it? What's happening, you know, there?
The truth is out there and Lauren wants to find it. But, you know, right. She's got this brother who has his whole life has been able to one up her at everything. Mm. And he has always said that he will find aliens before she does. And he is a radio telescope expert with NASA. So he actually might be able to do that. And Lauren and him have never really gotten along and they've been estranged for a while. And, you know, I really wanted Lauren to have a little bit of closure with that because it's just been one of those things that's really been, it's the fly in her ointment. Yeah. And she's just never been able to figure out her brother. He's always just pestering her and one-upping her. And it's just, she just never felt like she could do anything better than him, but she's ready to go out and prove it. So they do get a little bit of closure there.
Well, now, wait a minute. Why is she feeling insecure? Okay, he's a NASA scientist, but she's a super cool television investigator scientist.
Yeah, well, he's got two PhDs. He got a full football scholarship to OU, and he's just the cat's pajamas, he thinks. And just never cut her any slack when they were growing up.
Sounds to me like you're having a lot of fun writing these books. Yes,
I do. They're a lot of fun, and there's just no limit to where these books can go. And I've actually already crafted 12.
Wow.
So I'm working on actually the 13th right now. So, which is actually not good. I don't write in order. I write in circles. So this one won't be the 13th book, but it's the 13th one of the series that I've actually crafted.
And will that actually deal with this being the unlucky number 13? Because there might be.
Well, here's the funny thing. You know the story of the Knights Templars and why we have Friday the 13th? There's a tie-in.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, that's appropriate for that one then.
Exactly.
Before we get to 13, though, there will be 4, which I think is coming out sometime in the mm-hmm. spring. Anything you can tell us about that one?
Sure. I will tell you the title. It is The Monk's Grimoire. And I actually wrote this one out of order. This was what I wrote after the WriterCon cruise, after we settled on the publishing contract and the first book came out. I sat down over the course of a holiday weekend when the weather was kind of dreary, sat out on my back patio and wrote 25,000 words in 2 days.
Oh,
and then spent a year and a half editing it.
Wow. Well, so, yeah, but that'll come later. That's incredible.
Yeah, I finished the whole book in 26 days total.
Just in case there's anybody who hasn't heard me talk about this or whining that we're not doing them this year, the RyderCon cruise was a blast. And that was just before the world started to shut down for the COVID lockdown. I mean, we're fortunate we got out of there, but what a wonderful time that was.
Oh, it was.
Got to work with a smaller group of people, more hands-on, and plus, of course, we're on a cruise boat and we're... and going, having fun and swimming and doing karaoke and going to, what's the name of that temple?
We went to Chichen Itza.
Yeah, that's it. That's going to be in a book. Or maybe it
was. That was in book two.
That was in Jaguar Queen.
Yeah, that was Jaguar Queen.
That makes sense. Well, I hope we'll do the quizzes again sometime. I think it won't be this year, but maybe when the world gets back to normal at least. So I hope. Yep. What else you got in the works, Betsy?
Well, we have an anthology coming out for the holidays, so that should be a lot of fun. We're going to explore some Christmas mysteries.
So this will be Lauren and her gang again?
Yes. Yes. And I think my favorite Christmas mystery is the mystery of Krampus.
And that figure is in your story, I'm betting.
Very heavily.
Just in case there's someone who doesn't know, tell them about Krampus.
Krampus is the Christmas devil, and he is an old Germanic legend. Looks like a kind of looks like a Bigfoot wearing a buffalo head with the horns on it, is the way I kind of think of it. So they have a big, they call it a Krampuslauf. It's a big parade. And the whole goal, if you're a Krampus, you have to scare a certain number of children in order to become an official member of the parade route. And to get invited back the next year. So the big deal is the costumes and being very terrifying and to scare the little children and make them scream, because Krampus is the anti-Santa Claus. So the good children get presents and the bad kids get stuffed into a sack and beaten by Krampus.
Where does this legend come from?
From Germany.
Oh, well, of course. I can say that, Bernhard being a very German name, so
yes, I have German heritage too.
Well, let's talk about writing for a little bit. I see you've got a couple questions here. Mm-hmm. Someone is saying, and I'll just quote it, "It was a pleasure seeing you at RyderCon. It gave me hope to continue my writing. Good work, Betsy." That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. Okay. Do you outline before you write?
Oh, heavens no. I'm a recovering cancer. And I say recovering because I'm actually kind of a planter. I kind of have a hybrid method that I use. When I first started writing, I was just pure pantser. I would just sit down and write and let myself wander. And 120,000 words later, then I'd figure out, okay, I need to edit. I need to cut this. You know, I might have some kind of a story crafted. But lately I have found what works better for me is I will come up with a concept and I will try to envision what the outcome should be. And I might write that last scene first. Again, I don't write my books in order, and the books themselves don't always get written in order. Sometimes they start out as kind of a patchwork quilt. So I at least kind of know where I want to go. Now, how I get there, I might meander through the woods, you know, up the mountain, down the side, and back around to the lake. It just depends on how I feel at that point. But I generally know where I want to end up. So I don't do an outline. I keep thinking I should, and I've tried. Now, when I edit, sometimes I will block out my scenes and I will take sticky notes and I will block out my scenes and stick them on the closet door back here. And I will have a whole book and my three acts will each be a different color. So I kind of think of a three act structure. And I there's lots of different ways you could do that. I don't have any fancy technology to do it. I just get out my sticky notes and use my closet door back there.
That's starting to sound a little bit like outlining, or at least veering into that territory.
That's after the fact. Usually it's when I'm editing, just to make sure I keep the scenes in order and make sure I get things where I want them.
Now, this astonishes me because the writing process you just described sounds disastrous to me. And yet here you are being very productive and never missing a deadline, right? You get the work done.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You have to find what works for you. It doesn't work for everybody, but that's what works for me.
So what's your writing day look like? Are you writing in the morning or the
evening? No, my mornings, I am up at 5:30. I shower, shampoo and shine, and I'm off to work into the office by 7:30. I put in a full work day. I'm usually home by 5:30 or 6. Dinner on the table, which is usually the coffee table in front of me. in the evening. And my kids are older. I have one in college who just moved out, and then I've got a senior in high school. So it's usually just my husband and myself for dinner. So I'll just make something for us, or we'll fend for ourselves. Once I get something to eat, then I go get my evening walk in, or I ride my bike, depending on what the weather's doing. At about 8 o'clock, I sit down and, usually get my jammies on, get comfortable, find a good cozy spot, curl up with the dog at my feet. She's begging to get out. And I start writing, and I will write until 10, 11 o'clock. Now on the weekends are when I get the most work done.
Right.
I usually meet a writer friend for coffee on Sunday. We do a lot of our editing, and we'll kind of go through and critique each other. But Saturdays and the evenings on the weekends, I get a lot done because I can work a lot later.
Holy smokes, that would never work for me. By 8, I wouldn't even be able to make my fingers move across the keyboard. I'm a morning person, but it sounds like you're up early in the morning too. You're just not doing something else.
I'm one of those people. I'm a morning night owl. So like, if I could have a nap in the middle of the day, I would function so much better. I also type really fast. My last time I took a typing test, they timed me at 145 words a minute.
Wow. That's almost record books, isn't it?
Yeah. I think at 150, the computer shuts down.
That's funny. Well, we have another question, and it looks like this comes from RJ Johnson, who we both know and has been on the podcast before, author of Dream Slinger. And he's asking, what's the strangest or most unexplainable thing you've learned in your research?
Well, I have done some very incredible research just from my home computer and from my desk, but I've also gone out and done some paranormal investigations. Really? I was involved in a group that used to go out at Fort Reno. They would host a ghost hunt every month. They would have one throughout the summer and the fall. And my mother volunteered out there as a genealogist and a researcher, so I would go out and help her. And then we would go out when they do the ghost hunt, just to kind of keep people with their groups and kind of follow around. And so we'd get to investigate with these paranormal researchers. And so one of the buildings at the fort is an old Victorian home that was built around the turn of a century that has been under renovations. And they've had some very unusual happenings in there. And one evening I took some pictures in the window, and I actually have a very clear image of a face. And you can tell he's kind of leaning in like that. Mm-hmm. And we all thought that was odd. We stood around looking at it, and I got 3 or 4 really good shots of it. And then we were walking around the building, and on the other side of the building, a third story window fell out and almost hit my mother. So that was a little unusual.
I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but that's dramatic. I know how that could have happened. Yeah. Wow.
So that was probably one of my most unusual investigations. I've lived in the Pacific Northwest. I grew up on the legend of Bigfoot. We used to go out in the woods, and I would always look for Bigfoot. But we're actually going to get to go here in a couple of weeks and go up to Mount St. Helens, where the first book is set. And I'm going to kind of fact check myself and make sure I got some of my locations in good order and actually do a little hunting for Bigfoot.
Well, the nice thing is you can always edit things these days. It's exactly. Never too late, right? If exactly. You find out. Now, I've been in that area. I've been on Rainier, but I didn't go to Mount St. Helens. Is that Bigfoot country?
Pretty much anywhere in the Pacific Northwest is Bigfoot country. Up down by Portland, Oregon is really kind of a heavy area of activity. From some of the reports that I've heard, that's where Cliff Brackman has the Bigfoot museum. So we're going to go check that out and go see what that's all about. I've been to Roswell, New Mexico. They have a really great UFO museum down there.
I've been there.
Seen UFOs. my husband and I took our honeymoon in Bermuda. So I've been to the Bermuda Triangle.
And you came back.
This is a lifestyle. This isn't just my writing.
I've been to Roswell. I've also been to, there's a cryptozoology museum in Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. Which I just stumbled across, actually, because I was there teaching something else and went walking. Literally came across.
On my bucket list.
It was pretty impressive. All right. Since you brought it up, and I know you do talk shows and get interviewed quite a bit as, an expert on unexplained phenomena. So what do you think? UFOs? Are we being visited?
I think the universe is too big for us to be so vain as to think that we're alone. I think there's something out there, whether they've come to check on us, I wouldn't be surprised, but obviously they decided we weren't worth it because they haven't made contact, or if they have, they haven't told us about it.
Right. So. Or haven't told everyone.
Exactly.
Maybe it's just Lauren who knows about it at this point. Who knows?
Exactly.
Well, what are you looking forward to in the future? You mentioned the Christmas anthology and the Monk's Grimoire. What else is in your future? I know you're writing other things.
Yeah, I have some other books that I have written. When I first pitched this book, I probably had about 15 or 16 manuscripts sitting in a file somewhere in a flash drive. So I have some women's fiction. I have some science fiction I'd like to publish at some point. I just want to be as prolific as possible. Somebody asked me when I published if I would consider using a pen name because Kulikowski is kind of a funny name. I'm like, why would I do that? It puts me right up there with King and Koontz. Right. So as long as my name can be said in the same breath, I'm a happy girl.
Yeah, it's not, but it's cool sounding. And I mean, people are going to misspell it probably for the rest of your life, but K names, I wouldn't change that.
Well, my first name gets misspelled more than my last name does, but I'm okay with that.
Sure, that I can understand. Becky, did you say?
I don't like that. Yeah, don't call me Becky.
Does that happen? Have you been to Hannibal? Because I took a ghost tour there. I went for the Mark Twain stuff, but yeah. It turns out it's haunted.
I haven't been there, but it's on my list.
What's your favorite haunted location?
Well, just because I've had so many experiences, Fort Reno was my favorite, but I also had some very unusual experiences down in New Orleans. I was part of OSHA's National Disaster Response Team after Hurricane Katrina. I was teamed up with an industrial hygienist out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And our first assignment was to go into Charity Hospital, which had been evacuated 10 days after the hurricane hit. Oldest public hospital in North America, originally built in 1736. And they just built it up and up and up and up and up. And it's just grown bigger. It's like four city blocks and it's 27 stories. We walked every inch of that building with no lights, no elevator, no air conditioning and full protective equipment, and had some very strange things happen. Things would move. We could hear people's voices. We hear footsteps in the stairwell. We were the only people in the whole building.
Well, that's, is that going to make it into one of these books sometime soon?
I have a series that an author who is working down in New Orleans writing a book and she sees some of the ghosts of Louisiana. So I think that's, at some point I'd like to revisit that book.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think books are going? We talked before about printing shortages and whatnot, but we know that's not really going to slow down reading. If people haven't stopped reading now with this endless stream of other alternative forms of entertainment, I don't believe they're ever going to. But what do you think's in the future for books and authors?
Oh, for me, it's audiobooks. I'm a rabid audiobook consumer. I will buy a copy of a book just to put it on the shelf so it looks good, but I want the audiobook. And I'll buy the audiobook and the copy book. Just, if I can get it autographed, even better. But I'm a huge fan of the audiobook. So that was something that was important to me as an author, was to make sure I could get an audiobook. And man, I love my audiobook narrator. Carrie Coelho is amazing. Yes.
Well, I feel the same way because she recorded Splitsville as well. She is a terrific narrator. In fact, I heard her doing your book and thought that should be the voice of Kenzie.
Yes.
All right. One more question, then I'm going to let you go. When the inevitable film or perhaps Netflix series of the Veritas Codex and its successors comes along, who's going to play Lauren? Who would you pick?
That's been the hardest one for. I have a whole casting board on my Pinterest page for all the characters in the book, and Lauren is really one of the hardest. I think my biggest wish list for Lauren is that it has to be a Native American actress because Lauren is Cherokee. So I would love to have an actress from the Cherokee Nation play that role. I have eyes on Michael Fassbender to play Rowan, but I haven't really picked out exactly who should be Lauren. I would love to have Angie Harmon, but I'm afraid she's a little bit older than Lauren currently. Mm-hmm. So, at some point maybe she could play her mother, but.
Right. Well, you want someone who can grow into it so they can do all.
Exactly.
20 books or whatever this ends up being, right?
Right. Right.
Sounds good to me. Betsy, thanks so much for being on this podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll have you again soon, I hope.
I agree.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, then, everybody, please remember to rate or review this podcast wherever it is you get your podcasts. It helps us very much, actually, and it helps other people like you, other writers, find out about the podcast. And, you know, it's paying it forward and passing on the word. So I very much appreciate it. We're in the planning stages right now, I should say, for next year's WriterCon 2022. It may seem too soon, but believe me, it's not. Take what we've learned and plan ahead. So if you have any suggestions on what you'd like to see there, what you'd like to happen, how to make the next conference even more spectacular, please share them with me. And my email address is, as always, willburn@gmail.com. That's willburn @gmail.com. And remember, this podcast is ad-free, supported by our patrons. I've got a site at Patreon, which you see on the screen right now, and Jesse's given you the address, patreon.com/willburn, where you can support this podcast. And I handle some author mentoring there too. So if you're interested, please check it out. Until next time, sneakers, keep writing. And remember, you cannot fail if you refuse to quit. See you next time.